Taking Stock on News Talk.
Thanks to Skillnet Ireland, driving business success through innovative training and upskilling.
You're welcome to Taking Stock on News Talk with me, Vincent Wall. We're joined now by Eamon Brennan, Director General of Eurocontrol, which manages airspace across Europe. Eamon, you're very welcome and thanks for joining us.
Hi, Vincent. Nice to be with you.
Now, after a long and distinguished career as Chief Executive of the Irish Aviation Authority, Eamon, you took over as Director General of Eurocontrol just under 3 years ago, I think September 2018. And from that vantage point, you have a unique perspective of the extremely tough challenges facing the aviation sector across Europe at the moment. I think the lowest point in terms of air traffic after COVID-19 hit us was mid-April, and it has recovered to some degree in the 6 months since, but it's still very tough and we're going into probably a very tough winter.
Yes, definitely, Vincent. I mean, in a normal day during the summer, we would do 37,000 flights throughout Europe. And we've hit, you know, days where we're doing 13,000. So we've had a huge reduction. Just to give you a practical example, yesterday, the 14th of October, we had a 56% reduction on where we were last year. And the load factors of airlines were averaging about 40%. You know, so you don't have to be a rocket scientist to see there that nobody's making money. Airports are 75% down in passengers, and basically nobody in the whole system can make any cash. And it's really at a very tipping point all throughout Europe. Even despite the subsidies that airlines have been getting, etc., it's very critical.
Now, Eurocontrol isn't actually an EU agency. You span 41 different jurisdictions across Europe, but the EU has delegated a lot of its air traffic operations and management functions to it. So you are, to some degree, very close to the governmental decisions governing how we travel and can't travel at the moment. So do you see both sides of the fence, Eamon, in the sense of the frustration and anger in some places amongst the airlines that we don't have a system that allows people to travel with the traffic lights system? And on the other hand, governments worried about public health and the dangers of people travelling.
Yeah, I mean, we're very cognizant of the, you know, the public health risks, etc. But at the end of the day, we're an aviation organisation, Vincent. And you know, from our perspective, we're a little frustrated with the governments throughout Europe, you know, who have acted in a very uncoordinated fashion. I mean, I have a simple theory on this. We have a common virus, and in similar circumstances, we should be responding to it in a similar way. But actually, that's not what happens in Europe. You know, we have different lengths of quarantine, different perceptions of tests. And I was very pleased yesterday to see a little first step by the Commission, where the Commission agreed on this traffic light system. Now, I know it's not fully welcomed by airlines and airports, but it is a very good first step. And I would urge all the governments to actually take this on board in a consistent manner. Because the biggest problem throughout Europe is that it has been cherry-picked by governments. And also, I would say, to our, you know, regret, really, there's a little bit of politicization of the virus, you know, and it's a medical and pandemic, and we believe it should be dealt with, you know, by and large, in as good a technical way as possible. But, you know, we're seeing different states, particularly in Eastern Europe, you know, reacting differently. So for me, it's huge frustration from the airlines. I mean, it's very, maybe just to finish on this, Vincent, it's difficult for an airline, you know, to go from A to B if they really have no certainty of what happens at B and can the passenger come back. So maybe if I could just let you know, I spoke to the CEO of a major airline this morning, and he told me that his bookings for late November and all of December are at 11% of where they were this time last year. And, you know, this is a big problem for Ireland as well as an island nation. So it's going to be a big issue for us going forward.
What do you mean by politicization of the virus, Eamon? And even though countries now do seem to have signed up to the Commission's traffic light system, green, amber and red, it's going to be left to them, it seems, as to whether to impose quarantine regimes or not.
Yeah, I mean, this is the issue, really. I mean, health is not a competence of the European Union, Vincent, and that causes people to interpret things in a different way. And what I mean by politicization of the virus is, you know, I think initially when it started off, everybody was worried about it, and, you know, we started getting very kind of like nervous about it. And I think governments did a brilliant job. And then I think it's become a little bit more where we see different reactions in different countries. And what we describe as politicization of the virus is just simply that it's not been dealt with in a standard way. I mean, it is a standard virus, so it should be dealt with in a standard way. So if we had a consistent approach throughout Europe, which the Commission are really trying hard to get, then I think the economy and then the airlines would actually do much better from that. And remember, it's important to realise that if you look at it from an Irish point of view, you know, you had very severe travel restrictions during the summer, but you still have the virus spread. And this is the reality. Whereas in Europe, they were flying all summer, and by and large, their performance is at least as good as Ireland, if not better in most cases. So, you know, the idea that, you know, if you look at, say, Dublin yesterday, you had 140 flights. Normally, you would have 700. And Aer Lingus yesterday only had 35 flights, and normally they would have 228, you know. So you're looking at a kind of a real meltdown for an island economy. And I just worry this, how, particularly as an Irishman, how Ireland recovers from this. Because, you know, the travel on an aircraft doesn't actually import the virus the way people are saying. It's very safe. Airlines are safe. Airports are safe. But the issue is really the customer and the passenger has no confidence to travel. I've never seen this in kind of 40 years in the industry, that the industry has just collapsed because the passenger is afraid to move.
You are an Irishman. Your late brother, Seamus Bennan, was a senior minister in many governments. Sounds like you believe the Irish government, perhaps to no fault of their own, but they have been foot-dragging and not clear on policy.
Well, I wouldn't, you know, I don't want to get into the political arena on it, Vincent, but just from an airline point of view, I think, and from an aviation point of view, I think we could have had a little bit more clarity. And what I would recommend to the Irish government, and indeed to all governments in Europe, is to proactively accept the EU traffic light system. You know, but what I'm hearing is that they're going to look at it, they're going to examine it, they're going to check it, and all of these things are not helpful, because reality is we're getting a huge amount of requests now. Maybe if I can just give you the immediate problem, is people are asking, can they go home for Christmas? Can they come back? Can families come from the UK? Will flights be operating? Why are airlines pulling schedule? And only this morning, Ryanair pulled their bases in Shannon and Cork and in Marseille, and it's a big problem. So we need a little bit of certainty, and I think people will respond very good to certainty and will comply with restrictions if they have some idea where it's going. And I think that you have to give a little bit of hope, and that's what I think is missing, I think, both from Ireland and from Europe generally.
What would you say to cynics, Eamon, who might say Eurocontrol and your member air traffic organisations all around Europe depend on the revenues generated by aircraft that fly across European airspace every bit as much as the airlines depend, and that this is a commercially driven argument as distinct from public health?
No. First of all, we're not a commercial organisation. We're an intergovernmental organisation with 42 member states. So we actually act for the states who are our owners. And, you know, we're funded by the states, and some of our funds are funded by airline fees. I understand that. But that's actually not the issue. The issue for us is really that, you know, if you're running a network in Europe, it's very difficult to run a European network when state A does X and state B does Y and then the next guy does a Z. And all we're pleading for in Eurocontrol is we're not asking for any outcome, Vincent. We're asking that a common approach be taken so people can plan, people can anticipate, people can proceed and hope. Because at the end of the day, you know, aviation is a huge part of the European economy. And you know, Lufthansa, for instance, at the moment are using 20% of their normal schedule. And we're looking at virtually, you know, a meltdown of the airlines by Christmas if something it doesn't happen. And the issue for me is, again, I come back to the same point, consistency of approach. And I would urge Ireland to adopt the system in full so that people will then say, this is published by the European Centre for Disease Control. Now we can see what Ireland's situation is and we can move on. And I think that would be much better for the public and for the passengers.
If there's any silver lining at all, and it's a very narrow one, Eamon, I acknowledge, it is that those flights that are taking place, one, are getting there on time generally, because just the skies are not congested in the way they have become so because of the huge growth in traffic up to this time. And, of course, emissions have fallen because there's lesser traffic. I presume one of the challenges that Eurocontrol, amongst others, must face is, as we hopefully get back to normal situation over the next 2 to 3 years, that emissions and those congestion issues are tackled head on.
No, I agree with you. I mean, the most important challenge that we face is to build back better. So what we're looking to do in Eurocontrol is to try and make sure that, you know, emissions have fallen, obviously, during the pandemic. But the reality is that, you know, aviation can recover quite quickly. So we had a situation in 2018 where we had a meltdown with delays in Europe. And last year we put in a huge amount of diversions and longer flight routes and level capping to deal with this issue. But sustainability is the game changer. For us, we're going to try and put in better routes. We have a new single European sky package that's going through the commission process at the moment. And we'd urge the Irish government to support this strongly. But, you know, there are new game changers like hydrogen, you know, sustainable aviation fuels. And one thing, I was at the European Parliament a number of weeks ago, and I did say to the Greens that, you know, we're all focused on making sure that we can eliminate CO2 emissions, that we can actually eliminate NOx emissions, and this will take time. But the game is not to kill aviation. The game is to reduce emissions. So my message to Green Party members throughout Europe was that, you know, aviation does not have to be your enemy, but you have to give us a little bit of time to make sure that over the next number of years, we can get to as close to zero emissions as possible by 2030. And I believe we can.
Do you? Because I know there have been huge efficiencies in conventional engines over the last 20 years or so, but just with the increase in traffic, that's always being swamped out. We've seen test pilot flights with hydrogen and electrically driven aircraft in recent months even, but these are very small aircraft. I mean, realistically, Eamon, how soon could we see normal civil aviation traffic being driven by different types of engines?
Well, that's the key question. I mean, let's be franker. The new generation of high bypass engines have significantly reduced CO2 over the last number of years. But we need a game changer, and this crisis can actually provide it. So what we believe is, and we've had a lot of discussions with Airbus, is that by 2035, we believe that you can have a hydrogen aircraft that will operate the same way as a basic 737. We think that the electric aircraft will have a smaller load, and you may see something coming on board there by about 2030. But we're about 10 years out. And what we're urging commissions to do, and we published a paper on it last week, is to not tax aviation out of existence, because we don't believe there's any link between carbon taxes and actually reduced emissions, but instead provide incentives the same way you've done for electric cars, etc., for aviation to move to sustainable aviation fuel. And I think in the short term, the sustainable aviation fuel is probably the way to go, Vincent, and you've got about 4 years before we get anything significant on that. At the moment, it's three times more expensive than jet fuel, and the supply is a big problem, but we're getting there. But I think the focus is very good, and I'd be really keen that we keep the focus during this pandemic. But I worry that some of the airlines, you know, they're fighting for survival. So when they're, you know, you're fighting to live and eat, sometimes green issues go out the window.
And yet you mentioned taxation on air travel there, Eamon. Many people would argue that the aviation sector gets away very lightly on the taxation front, that there's no excise on aviation fuel, there's no VAT on airline tickets. What would be wrong with perhaps putting a more realistic price on the cost of travel? Apart from the commercial impact on airlines, do you think that would return air travel to an elite?
No. I mean, we need to be really clear here, Vincent. I mean, aviation is one of the only industries that funds itself. I mean, aviation pays for its own airports, pays for its ATC, pays for everything itself. Government input to aviation is virtually nil when you compare it to train and road transportation. I mean, the stations and the trade tracks are put down by the government. The roads are built by the government. Aviation pays for everything. So that's point number one. Number two is, if you tax aviation, actually, it doesn't have reduced carbon emissions. Our paper we published proves that. What actually, you know, will reduce carbon emissions is basically having better engines and having hydrogen and sustainable aviation fuels. I really believe that. And the third point you raised yourself, if you do that, you return travel to an elite. So you go back to the days, you know, way back in the 80s, where it was 400 euros approximately to go to London. And the point is, if you do that, well, then you are bringing aviation to an elite. And actually, you know, Alexander Dejuniak, the man who runs the IATA, the International Aviation or Aviation Travel Association, he has a very good phrase, Vincent. And he says that aviation is the business of freedom. So where people can move and go around, you find that actually the economies work better, society works better. And this idea of returning to national states and everybody holidaying on their bicycle is okay for a while, but people will want to travel. And, you know, and I like, you know, holidaying in Ireland, in my own country, but I want to see other countries. And I have family in Australia. I want to see them. I have family in the UK. I want to see them. So I think that's the reality.
Our guest here on News Talk is Eamon Brennan, Director General of Eurocontrol, which manages airspace across Europe. Getting back to the management of airspace, Eamon, and you referenced there some of the programme, some of the progress being made towards a single European sky initiative, where effectively there would be far fewer individual air traffic control regimes, and the whole organisation of both civilian and military air traffic would be much more streamlined. That is a really, really slow process, isn't it? I mean, this goes back to 1999, and even the latest meeting of European transport ministers on the topic last December, they kind of kicked it out again for another 3 or 4 years, and they asked the Commission to investigate the impact of this. The various jurisdictions, and we all know about the power of air traffic controllers in France, the various jurisdictions don't want to give up their power and authority and revenue generation abilities.
Yeah, you've probably hit it on the head there, Vincent. I mean, in reality, the cost of running, and we collect the money and administer it, the cost of running the European air traffic management system is 8 billion for the en route system and 2 billion for the airport system each year. So that's 10 billion. You contrast this with the United States, where if there's only one jurisdiction, the problem we have in Europe, of course, is that we have 41 member states with individual airspaces, you know, many different languages, multiple cultures. And the real reality is that the states see their airspace as an asset. It generates revenue for them. And this has always been an issue going forward. Now, for me, the frustration that we see, you cited, you know, that this goes back to 1990s. Actually, it goes back to 1960. And there was a plan back in 1962 that there would just be 5 air traffic control centres in Europe, one of them which I think would be based in Shannon. Now, we're a long way from that today because we now have 65 or 66. So what's happening today in the air traffic control sector is that we need to get to a situation where we do see some consolidation. But that's not as important as having a kind of a networked approach. And that's where Eurocontrol comes in very strongly, is that we provide the network management. You know, if you take off from Dublin and you fly to Athens, we clear you the whole way from Dublin through France, Geneva, etc., right down to Athens. So we now at least have put in place a kind of a network manager that has the power to actually do that. But I would say, Vincent, that the most important thing for us going forward is if you look at the European project, we had a single European currency. You can drive from Sweden right down to Bari in Italy, basically without anybody asking you any questions. However, you cannot fly from Ireland to the UK without meeting multiple call checks, multiple radio checks, radar vectors, all of this kind of thing. So it's a big project. And at the last meeting of the ministers, They weren't as negative as you met out there in that they have given the Commission the go-ahead for a new reform package of called Single European Sky 2 Plus, and the proposals for that will go to the Parliament soon. So I'm reasonably optimistic for change, but it's going to take time.
Well, that's good to hear, Eamon. But one of the factors I didn't put in there in terms of obstacles, of course, is the power of the trade unions. And we know how strong they are in jurisdictions like France. Do you think that can be overcome as well?
No, I think it can. I mean, the trade unions in this area are not as negative as they're portrayed. I mean, one of the big things that's changing this whole industry, and particularly air traffic control, is new technology. We now have satellite systems for surveillance. We soon will have satellite communications. And, you know, maybe I'll give you an example, Vincent. You know, sometimes technology moves on without you knowing it. And a good example would be, how did everybody suddenly end up leaving their CDs away and suddenly using Spotify? How do we all end up watching Netflix? You know, it happens by osmosis. So I'm seeing in the last number of years significant new technologies coming in place, which means you'll be able to control aircraft from point A to in the other part of the world. So, you know, from Brussels, you can control aircraft in Australia. That technology exists. It didn't before. And I think in the next 10 years, you'll see this. So I think unions will see this happening. The general thing is that the aircraft are much better equipped on the air than the ground systems are, but we're closing that gap and that will change it. And I think we get a reasonably good reform response from unions for that. But it's going to take time. This doesn't move quick because it's very much seen as a national asset. And you put your finger on a previous point. We also have a strong military input as well because airspace is seen as a strategic asset. And when you move to Eastern Europe, particularly when you get near the Russian Federation, it very much strongly becomes a key issue there, as you can imagine, for their defence.
Speaking of technology, Eamon, and perhaps we might wrap it up on this point, you are going to be, in Eurocontrol, going to be across the whole advent of drone traffic for all sorts of uses. In your stewardship of Eurocontrol, can you see a huge amount of additional drone traffic in the skies over Europe and over Ireland in the coming years?
I mean, we're very involved in it, Vincent, in terms of making sure that drones integrate correctly in civilian airspace. We're also involved in, say, the integration of military zones in civilian airspace. So my outlook is that, it's going to take a little bit of time. You know, what we call use space, which is lower airspace up to about 500 feet from the ground, I think you see a lot of drone operations there in the next number of years. But it's well regulated at the moment. But what I feel is that the issue for me with drones at the moment is the business case for their operation is not well established. So initially when it started, we had a lot of hype. Everybody had drones. But, you know, does it make sense to operate a fleet of drones for delivering pizzas and this kind of thing? Where I think in practice, you know, if you get better ones that might be more viable for medical issues and things like this, it's quite feasible, or for examining pipelines or railway tracks and this kind of thing. So I don't see a huge upsurge in the next 2 to 3 years. I think it's going to take about 2 or 3 years more before we get reliable battery technology. But from about 2025, I think you're going to see significant drone activity in European airspace.
And air taxis in our city, is that still a bit Blade Runner-ish?
It is a bit, I think, at the moment. But, I mean, you know, you will see more drone activity definitely in cities. I mean, the technology, and just maybe to finish with this, the technology of sense and avoid and, you know, what they call geofencing is now very well advanced for cities. So you will see drone operations in cities. And I think that will come in 2025. I would guess you'll see a lot of it in Dublin.
Okay, we'll leave it there. Fascinating and tough and challenging time in the aviation sector, and a unique perspective there from Eamon Brennan, Director General of Eurocontrol, which manages airspace across Europe. Eamon, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, Vincent.
Taking stock on Newstalk.
Thanks to Skillnet Ireland, driving business success through innovative training and upskilling.